Hey, y'all. Welcome back to Erase the State. It's Maddie K here with a very special guest. Given all of the corona quarantine madness that's occurring right now, I couldn't think of anybody better to figure out what the fuck is going on behind the scenes than the one and only Monica Perez. Monica, how's it going?
Great. Thanks for having me on. I know I try to crack the code on this stuff. It's such a somber topic and I laugh about it because some of the stuff is so ridiculous. Then people are just like, I know someone who died. I'm like, everyone knows somebody who's died, you know, and that you have to have a sense of humor. I don't mean somebody who's died of coronavirus. I just mean, you got to have a sense of humor about stuff. You got to look at the big picture. If we don't laugh, we're going to cry. So hopefully we can have some laughs, even though the topic is maddening on like every level.
Yes, yes. No, I'm certainly with you. And I mean, I know people who have died, but not from coronavirus. I don't even know anybody who has coronavirus. And actually—
Me neither. And I asked people that question, and then I've done some just reading, and I had a great guest recently, David Crowe, who's writing a book called The Infectious Myth. Mm-hmm. And the testing, like if you scratch the surface, nobody claims, like even the scientists who are blowing smoke, nobody really claims that it is a test for coronavirus, you know, COVID-19, and that if you test positive, you have it, you know, it's so even what they say is happening. And I try to just peel away numbers, the crappy apples to oranges numbers they pump out. And I mean, I looked up today on the CDC website, total deaths in the United States from February 2nd to April 15th. It was today, April 15th is today. And it said 9,600. Mm-hmm. And I just got a headline that said, literally said, it, right across my screen, it said 30,000 death toll in the U.S. nears 30,000. So that was the media, the Daily Mail. So I don't know what the answer is, but when I tried to peel away the numbers and say, okay, for that time of year. So then I looked at like how many people total died in this country in that period. It was like 500,000, which is exactly on track, because I think like 2.5 million people die a year, and that was a 10-week period, so times it by five. So in any case, there isn't like some weird, crazy blip in deaths. Sure. And, you know, from what I can tell from their numbers, but they're not like, then you go to New York, and New York says that they have 10,000 deaths in New York alone, which is more than the CDC actually has recorded on its website for the whole country.
Right.
So I really don't know the answers, and people want me to believe that this is like a freaky disease, whatever. It's yet to been proven to me that this is no more than another strain, if even that, of a very common kind of virus, a cold or flu, which does have fatal impact in vulnerable demographics every season.
Sure, sure. And I mean, just to kind of, you know, level the conversation playing field, you know, I'm willing to accept that A, the virus is real. B, it might be a little bit more infectious than others. Maybe not. I don't know. And C, I honestly, I don't even know what the death rate is. I saw somebody today say that the death rate was like super high compared to other viruses. And I'm like, I don't think that's the case. But I mean, so I looked up, I did tell you that I didn't do any prep, but that's a lie. So I looked up just cases So cases in Harris County, or we'll do the greater Houston area, is something like 6,000. Yeah, 6,014 total cases in the greater Houston area. So that's all the way down to like Matagorda Bay, over to like Chambers County, the Galveston Bay area, then up to the Woodlands, basically. You're familiar with the area, right? So,
or yeah, more or less. Husband. From probably the town you're broadcasting at.
Yes. We'll have to talk about that another time, I think.
And I lived in Houston.
Right, right.
I was there for Rita.
Hurricane Rita. Yeah, I was in Port Arthur for Rita.
It was so ridiculous.
You guys didn't get shit. And we were off work and evacuated for like a month in Port Arthur.
Here was the problem, is that they told everybody in Houston just to be safe to evacuate. So everybody in Houston clogs the highway and nobody from Galveston could get out. It was
exactly.
A terrible thing. I didn't go, just so you know. I had babies in diapers, and everybody bought out the formula and everything. And I was like, this is ridiculous. We're 30 miles inland. I'm not going. Now I think they seed clouds, so there actually is a chance that it could happen.
I guarantee you we're going to talk about that. So please put a pin in that.
Sorry. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to derail you.
You're fine.
This is like, it'll be an hour into it, and you'll still be like, I'm trying to read these stats here.
No worries. So at any rate, with just over, like a hair over 6,000 total cases in the greater Houston area, there are 99 deaths. 99. Out of 7 million people that live in the greater Houston area, 99
How many
deaths.
Of those people are younger than 65?
I don't have that data. But you know, but I would guarantee you that most of those people, vast majority, are over 65. Probably had a host of other comorbidities to go along with it. And they were probably going to die anyway.
That's what I'm saying. So, like, I looked it up today on that page on the CDC, and 91% of the deaths, 91% were over 65. So, or maybe it was 50, over 55, and 78% were over 65. And the way I would look at it is, if that even if it accelerated the death, which I'm not sure it did, I think people have pneumonia. You can die of pneumonia without any bug in you at all. So if they're dying, whatever. But then you have to look at like year over year, last year, this year, next year, and just see maybe it accelerated those 99 people from being dispersed over the year. But that may even just be because the treatment protocols have changed and are becoming more dangerous. I was just reading about pneumonia, and it actually had like on the pneumonia, you know, portal of the world, whatever, like they dedicate their everything to pneumonia. There was a whole paragraph about like how deadly ventilator related pneumonia is. Like it was actually a separate subheading. Like, but don't give anyone a ventilator who's at risk of pneumonia.
Which is like, what everybody's clamoring to do, right? It's like, oh, you got coronavirus. You need the ventilator.
That's why I look at these numbers and I say, look, I'm not a health person, but I understand numbers. I certainly know how to crunch numbers. Like you give me numbers, I can just crunch the crap out of a number. So I want this data, which we give the CDC $6 billion a year. The World Health Organization also spends billions of dollars every year. And almost all of health, those health entities are about research. They're about outreach. They're about education. But a lot of it is about gathering data. That's what they say. That's why Apple and Google is now following you around, because health data is the difference between life and death. We'll all live forever if Apple and Google get our health data. So if they give me the data, I can figure out what's happening. If, you know, tell me who's being treated, how they're being treated, what their age group is, what their morbidity is. If you give us that information, we can crunch it and then decide what's really going on. But these same people who they give you projections, which is not really data. Projections are not data. They are a guess. So they act like, well, we have the numbers. It's like, those are not numbers. Those are just a guess. That's irrelevant. Whatever. Tell me what the data is. But these are the same people who tell you up and down, like if you don't believe in the moon landing or the theory of evolution, that you just don't believe in science or climate change or whatever. If you have any questions about dinosaurs, which are too fucking big, then, you know, I don't mean to like throw every theory in the world, but I'm just saying.
No, it's okay. They've all been discussed on this show anyway, so it's
okay,
fine.
Okay, great. Okay. So you laugh, like, you know, they will laugh. They laugh at you. They mock you. They dismiss you for raising counter arguments to all their science. And then when it comes to science, we are supposed to not analyze their numbers. If it's really science, they should be able to sit up there with a spreadsheet. Maybe 99% of the world can't follow along, but it would certainly put to rest a lot of the doubt about the wisdom of their policies if they would just let us see those numbers. And those of us who can crunch them, they would have me on their side. Maybe not with the policies, but I would defend the connection between the data, the cost-benefit analysis, and the policies. And then I would say, okay, now that we've established that your thing makes logical sense, let's talk about what is legal and what should be legal.
Since we're kind of going down that path, what I really want to talk to you about
they are too
what big. What is actually going on here? I mean, with all of this happening, they've got everybody convinced that we can't go outside or we're going to get, you know, stricken with the plague or some shit. What's happening behind the scenes that we don't see? We kind of brought this up on the last show that we did with a good friend of mine. Shout out Dexter De La Paz, Dogman Respector. Go follow him. So what's happening here? What are the state, local, and federal governments trying to get past? What are the NGOs trying to do behind the scenes? What are we missing that may not appear in the headlines?
Well, I think back to when I started reading the Event 201 stuff, And I started kind of broadcasting about that. I think my first show was February 8th. So it's been more than 2 months. And if you go back and look at Event 201, even I, as I was talking about, I mean, I basically latched onto it. My co-host, Brad Binkley, like said, oh, did you read about this Event 201? I was like, no. And I like looked at it. And it was just simply because it was a novel coronavirus live simulation from like 2 or 3 months prior to that. But it was crazy. It was like GDP is going to go down 11%. Stock markets are going to go down 20 to 40%. Economic disaster will ensue for 10 years. Societal impact will last even longer. And I was like, okay, they're, you know, they go too far, but like, obviously they saw this thing coming or whatever. Right. But at that, so when I was looking through that stuff, the thing that I found most interesting, their stuff, like their fake newscasts and how the thing unrolled, that is interesting because it's tracking like perfectly. We'll see in May if there's a 2.0 coming, like if it really does last 18 months and if we really are in a false, you know, in a lull right now, that would be all Event 201. And that's interesting. But for me, like the tell is the 7 calls to action from the Johns Hopkins Institute. And I noticed from the first minute I read that, I was like, I'm seeing this thing. Obviously, it looks like a vaccine thing. It looks like a world government thing. It looks like a media suppression thing, public-private partnerships, all that. But this, there's one thing they're emphasizing here, which seems a little overemphasized, and that's just to make sure the money keeps flowing. Make sure the IMF is funding everybody. Make sure the federal banks in the world are, the central banks of the world are funding everybody. And my first thought on that was that I read this interesting book called Conjuring Hitler. Mm-hmm. And the guy, Guido Preparata, he's like super scholarly Italian guy. And he was saying how the British basically, or whatever the powers that be, found Hitler because he'd be like the most dysfunctional for Germany, really cut the Germany down on the knees, but would not mess with the financial hierarchy. So the money, even though World War II, the world at war, 60 million people dead, just like Event 201, the money was still flowing up top. And as I read the Johns Hopkins stuff, I thought they're talking about making sure that transportation and goods and money keep flowing, even though people are dying everywhere. They're talking about getting people used to working in like PPE, whatever, personal protective mm-hmm. equipment. That was in there. And I said, this is fucking sick. This is like, you know, my vision of what they were looking for was this world where if you read the report from Iron Mountain or anything that Bill Gates has ever said or the Georgia Guidestones, whatever, like they clearly, a big goal is always to keep the population down. Population is too big for their liking. Maybe it's too big for Mother Nature. I don't know, but they don't like it. And if the report from Iron Mountain is a book from the 60s, I don't know if it's stylized or it's basically true. And they said, and the subtitle is on the necessity and possibility of substituting for war or something. Could you end war and still maintain the hierarchy? And it said war serves a lot of purposes. And some of them is to maintain the hierarchy. Some is to get people to keep paying taxes, to get rid of, it's like a euphemized form of slavery. It's a way of population control, but it's a way of population control that's kind of regressive because you take the young, healthy guys mm-hmm. and the like weaker people live. So this is like the opposite of that. But I was thinking, okay, if they're looking for a big war or a population check event, they might want to put, so another thing of these calls to action was they wanted to put into place public-private, they wanted the businesses to lobby the governments to change rules, to put this kind of infrastructure in place to be prepared for one of these like massive death events. And I thought they are preparing us, putting all this shit into place so that when there is a massive death event, the money still flows. So if you have a hierarchy like this, you have a bunch of people on the bottom. I'm making a triangle. You have a bunch of people on the bottom.
But not the Illuminati triangle. I want to point that out.
Not the Illuminati. Well, I don't know yet. So it doesn't have an eyeball in it.
Yes.
So you want the hierarchy to stay in place like that. If you're going to kill a lot of people and you don't really care about that as long as you can stay where you are. And I just felt like everything I read there was about how to have this like massively disruptive event and still at the very highest levels have control, have the businesses in league with the governments, in league with the international banks, in league with international organizations to all kind of agree to keep things flowing, even though tens of millions of people were dying. And this time, I don't actually think that tens of millions of people are dying. I actually question if you could really just simply make a virus do that anymore. I think that like bacteria has that kind of power, but I don't think a virus really does if you have good sanitation and stuff. So I still think that that could be like a really, really big picture element of it, but I'm starting to think that, and that really smacks of a very high level of control. And when it came down that it was all about the money, you know, it seems like it's all about the money from the Fed to the fiscal stimulus and everything. Then I started to think, you know, they needed that money flow excuse. Like they needed the whole pandemic thing, that excuse. They even, maybe even, now they're not emphasizing event 201, but if they get someone like me who digs a little deeper to interpret events in the context of event 201, I'm always going to be back to the pandemic or back to like the mortality or back to like that bigger picture and all that shit. But it may just be, and I'm beginning to think that it is simply that they just did not know how to get out of the 2008 2.0 crash. They had kicked the can and they had to do something. And I read an article from last year that there was a $10 trillion corporate debt bubble in the US. And this is a $10 trillion fix. And even if I think they kind of wanted Trump to have a trade war with China, you know, make that up. I think China's basically in on this, and that they were going to get him reelected and then let the market completely crash and have him rubber stamp all these laws. But I don't think actually they could kick the can 6 more months. I think, and I was wondering about that. I was like, I don't know if they can kick the can 6 more months on this thing. Like it's an 11-year expansion at 2% interest rates. I just don't know. And now they've done this and they are signing all that stuff while the First Amendment is suspended. And he's even whipping out his infrastructure plan, which he says is a jobs program, which to me is exactly what FDR did with the Great Depression.
The WPA all over again.
Exactly. Exactly. And it's infrastructure and it's jobs and it's financial crisis. And maybe it's war. Maybe it's just Cold War. Maybe it's hot war followed by Cold War. But I think the Cold War with the Soviet Union was actually totally fabricated anyway. So, or I should say orchestrated from the top, from the military industrial complex in order to keep that stuff going. And I think that's what we're doing with China right now. I think they were trying kind of Russia. Like, I kind of think they tried Ted Cruz and Trump and Hillary, like what was going to work. Trump's perfect for this. Absolutely perfect. And I think, sure, you know, maybe Russia isn't big enough to be this problem. And China really is.
So what do you think is China's actual role here? I mean, so I know they're kind of pointing out, or it all started with like, no, nobody look over here. Everybody look at the wet market. You know, that's where it all started. But even now, the media seems to be kind of leaking out like, well, maybe this thing is engineered and maybe it did come from a lab. And, you know, so what do you think happened? And what was China's responsibility?
I think China also has a debt problem. So they need cover as well. So we have these centrally run economies and monetary systems, trade, whatever, interactions. And when they go horribly wrong, and they go horribly wrong because there's never any correction, there's never course correction, there's never feedback, there's nothing. There's this big paradigm, there's an idea that isn't true and that people act on. So it's naturally not going to work out. And then the people who make all the decisions, there's absolutely no way you can blame anyone else. There's no avoiding the blame. And then this comes along. And I kind of felt this with like ISIS and Russia. Putin should be like, ISIS is a creation of the United States. Like, here's the documents. But he doesn't, because he's like, hey, ISIS, I got to go to Syria. Be right back, you know? And it's like, yes, it worked for you. It works for us. It's going to work for China. So I think that they had a problem also. And because they are like openly centrally controlled, they have to really cover their ass. And I think those kind of places generally have that kind of promote idolatry at the highest levels, you know? So what I think that, so the two CDCs that were at event 201 was the US and China. And I mean, so they're in on it, right? I mean, they're absolutely sure. In on it. Whatever be event 201, one thing or another, it's a part of this, and they were in on it, and they are not calling it out. And if I were to say what is really, really happening, I think that Wuhan is the perfect place to start this, because it had been mentioned even before in like pop culture as the ground zero for something like this, because it's where that bioweapons lab is, or whatever you call it, the lab of the highest, you know, biological security. Sure. That's where it is. It's also an industrial city with a lot of smog, a lot of old guys, a lot of smokers. So if you were to pick a place on Earth to start this, complete with conspiracy theories that are an essential part of Event 201, they need the conspiracy theories to include information control as one of the pandemic responses, the kind of extra legal pandemic responses. So I think they picked it. And I think this was entirely orchestrated. I think all those scare videos coming out of China were part of like how you can't validate information anymore by like having an official source or the media tell the information. It has to be a leak. It has to be a hack. It has to be a whistleblower. It has to be something that doesn't seem to be like, trust me, I'm telling you information, because nobody believes anything anymore. I mean, obviously everyone believes everything because we wouldn't be in the situation, but the way they manipulate right. The propaganda, they do like kind of level two information. So because if you looked around the United States, you're not seeing piles of bodies burning. You're really not seeing it. You don't know anybody who has it. I don't know anybody who has it. And anytime somebody tells me they know someone who has it or died of it, I say to them, who is this person? Do you know this person? Did this person overreact? Or is this person in a situation where they feel vulnerable? So they went to the hospital and then things happen. You know, tell me about this case you're talking about. And I've just never gotten where people are like, no, it's my 35-year-old friend, like just fucking up and died. You know, right. It's not none of that. So when they go, so I feel like the validation of the horror of it came out of these ridiculous videos coming out. So the conspiracy crowd was sending me video after video. Have you seen the piles of bodies, the smoke? Have you seen what's going on in China? Like, they're not telling us, but have you seen it? I'm like, if you're seeing it, you're meant to see it. And China knows, because, and this was my example, was that for 40 years, women were like getting shot crossing the border so they wouldn't be forced to have an abortion. And I never saw one video about that. So I think that they went along with it because it will help them all restructure their financial markets and restructure the economy. Don't forget, we are in the USMCA is the spoke, is the hub that all the spokes are going to plug into. The USMCA, if we make any unilateral trade agreements with anyone else, it has to be approved by the USMCA or we get kicked out of the USMCA. So that means it has to coordinate with it, because we're not going to build our entire economy around a continental deal and then just get kicked out of it. You know, sure. That wouldn't be okay. So Brexit is about that. This China thing is about that. And now they get to completely restructure the economy of the world, centrally controlled. It doesn't look central, but it's coordinated on a highly, you know, overarching basis. And even I think that the Hong Kong protests kind of, I think Hong Kong at the end of this, Hong Kong's supposed to be fully integrated in 2047. And we can argue about whether these things are plots and what does what and what's a coincidence, but I am predicting that Hong Kong is fully integrated into China before 2047. And we can look at all these things. As a result of the protests, as a result of this, nobody will even notice it. It won't even be big news, right? It won't even matter. Like, that's, who cares anymore?
Well, and so, right now, I mean, was there even a protest? Who even talks about that anymore? No one remembers
that's
this.
That's what I'm saying. Like, whatever they did, and it looked, I mean, it did look like the people in Hong Kong, the governor and everything, were stressed out. Like, I don't think that, like, everyone but you knows everything. Like, I don't think that. I think almost nobody knows anything. Mm-hmm. But if you ever see how media or academia or politics or anything works, all you care about is the person right above you or right next to you or who's writing the checks. And you're not going to sit there and say, why are we doing this again? What exactly? It doesn't work that way. If you've ever even listened to a conversation like that, been on a call like that, or, you know, heard how lobbyists talk, they just tell you. And it's not like they're sitting there weighing what's the truth, what's the right answer. So whatever's happening in Hong Kong, it looked like a real situation. But at the very highest levels, and if you looked at like our laws that we passed at that time to kind of support the Hong Kong activists, what we were doing was we were cutting off all trade with Hong Kong while there was a disruption, which chokes them off. I mean, right. It's just, it was played right into their hands. So I just feel like it looks like we're at this dire battle with China over the Wuhan virus, over trade, over Hong Kong. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like at the end of this, we'll have a Cold War that serves everybody's purposes. And there will actually quite possibly, just like the thing with Hitler, you might have total, you know, seamless financial transactions above it all. Like kind of unlike the way the Cold War was with Russia and the USSR, where they kind of did suffer industrially for that. China might not even look at China. I mean, China supposedly is as communist as North Korea, right? So why do we trade with China? You know, and when people are like, well, North Korea is like the reason it's absolutely dark all the time is because it's communist. It's like, yeah, well, China's not dark all the time.
Only because we've cut them off. That's why.
That's what I think. I mean, I'm an anarcho-capitalist. Like, I don't think like, you know, communists can work. You're just bad. I don't think that. I just think it's not as ideological as all that, and that we could have a Cold War with China and they could still have, they could be better off. Especially if what we're talking about is like a multi-trillion dollar collapse that they don't have to suffer regime change as a consequence for.
Sure.
Us neither. We could have had a nice regime change here. So, and I don't mean swapping out Trump for Biden. I mean restoring the Constitution.
Just as a brief aside, I, you know, I'm an anarchist as well. I'm not a fan of either of these people, but both are going to provide a lot of seriously great entertainment in the upcoming election season, I believe. Just getting the ability to watch those two nincompoops fucking debate.
Biden has that Alzheimer's thing working. And, you know, I mean, I think it's fake. Personally, I think he's completely faking that.
Sure.
Or he was picked because he has it, but I don't think so. I think he's...
Either way, it's going to be great.
Yeah, I think it's going to be pretty funny. I really am curious to see, because Trump is an actor.
Sure.
So he was like the Apprentice guy. So that's acting. And I want to see, I think Biden's probably up to the task. I don't think it's that hard to act like stupid. You know, like, I don't think it's that hard to be like, I just don't think it's that hard.
I think I do it once a week on this show. So I'm, I can attest it's not that hard.
It's pretty easy.
So earlier you were mentioning, you know, the mass graves and stuff allegedly that China had, right? And I don't know if you saw this in the news. It was kind of quick in, quick out, but they were mentioning these quote unquote mass graves that were being dug in New York as a result of the coronavirus, right? That was Potter's Field. Did you see that? And there was no mention of whether or not these people were actually, you know, COVID deaths. But everybody was just like, yeah, that's fucking Potter's Field. Like, that's what it looks like every day.
Where people get buried. Yeah. And, you know, how long ago were the pictures taken even? Sometimes.
Sure.
You know, instead, I was looking at that. They're like, we need FEMA to help bury these bodies. And that's when they said that they had 10,000 COVID bodies. And during that time period, New York would normally, I just crunched a few numbers, experience 11,000 deaths during that time period. So they're saying their death total doubled. And if that's true, then I could see maybe they have a push through problem. But on the other hand, they, I guess, probably have to bury 10,000 people a month
anyway,
every month.
Yeah.
You know, every single month, like as I'm thinking about it, I did a bunch of numbers on that. Yeah, they have 104. I know, I just love numbers. 142,000 deaths a year in New York. This was 2017, had 141 point. So,
and there's been no spike, you said, right? So,
well, the CDC numbers don't break out New York. So it's hard. Like, I just can't find a repository for numbers. It's driving me crazy.
But even today, it came out that another 3,000 were added to the death toll, right? And it was just they weren't even proven to be COVID cases. It was just like, oh, well, they may have been exposed.
So almost all, my argument would be that all of the deaths are just moving them from cold, flu, pneumonia, and chronic lower respiratory disease, which is right. like second or third killer in the world, always, like all of these charts. It's fourth in New York. Chronic lower respiratory disease kills 7,000 people a year. And flu and pneumonia kill 4,500 people a year. So I would just say, you know, heart attack, stroke, like if you have pneumonia, if you have congestive heart failure and you can't, like, you know, that people's ankles swell up or mm-hmm. they get pneumonia easily because their circulation starts to fail. That's really, thank you, a heart problem. And, but you could categorize that. So 44,000 people a year die of heart attacks. Those are probably almost all old people in New York I'm talking about. You could easily just move from column A to column B, like all of these deaths. But even sure. if you're not moving any of them, even if it is really 10,000 more bodies, that's really just 2 months. You know, the 10th or 11,000 they already have to bury every year anyway. Mm-hmm. And then they're not allowing funerals or anything. So it's not like you really care. You don't have to schedule them. There's no hearses. There's nothing. It's just whatever. And I would furthermore say it's not 10,000 extra bodies for the year. It's probably no extra bodies for the year.
Right. Right. It's just kind of a drop in the bucket. It's a blip.
So, yeah, it just all seems like, you know, it's clearly manipulative. Why not? Why don't we just put it all in perspective and have a conversation? Why is there like not one politician who people respect enough to put them in the media who's actually looking at it this way? They're saying reopen America come what may. It's like, no, not come what may. Like, what's the truth? Let's just talk about it. Let's have a rational conversation. And you don't have rational, you know, you have every day my headlines that it's like Monica news from Google for Monica, and it's like Trump called Fauci an a-hole. Fauci said Trump is stupid. It's like those are my top two stories every single day. I'm like, this is not helpful.
Because we're absolutely living in idiocracy. It has absolutely devolved into that point. And now we have Vince McMahon heading up this like whole reopening team or whatever, right? So it's like, here we are.
Yes, exactly. And then I was thinking that everybody who gets the vaccine or who like is like, I'm not bringing kids into this world because I think the vaccine will be sterilizing. Like, I think it will impair fertility. That's just what I think, because that's all that Bill Gates cares about. So, and he said vaccines will bring down the birth rate. So that's what my working assumption is. So I'm thinking like the more highly educated you are, the more likely you are to like, oh, well, you know, they say the vaccines, you know, that those people really like to follow mm-hmm. the rules. And then just any like intelligent, like my kids are just like, I don't know, man, if you can bring kids into this world. So I was like, okay, so who is going to be having kids? Yeah, that comes straight out of Idiocracy. Also, right. I was like, I think you have to have the kids. Sorry. Like I will let them live with me in the tunnel until it's time. You know, I will raise them. I will raise them without a jack in their neck. But, you know, I think you have to have them. We'll name them Sarah and John Connor, and then we'll just
there meet you go. You in 20. And so you also brought up the whole smoking connection, right? So like smokers allegedly are being
in Italy and China.
More. Yes.
Yeah. Of course.
So I remember that was kind of like the initial thing that came out, right? Older smokers, history of immune issues. And then it seems like a couple of weeks ago, this like flew across Twitter just really quick. It was like, if you have some sort of nicotine intake, it could be helpful to you. And now I'm seeing like actual reports that are saying, oh, well, current smokers might actually be okay with this, that it might actually be good, that it kills either the virus or whatever's going on. So I don't know if you've seen that or what you would make of any of this.
Well, there are two things. First of all, smoking, the only thing I ever heard smoking was actually good for is to prevent Parkinson's disease.
Okay.
So smokers have a much lower rate of Parkinson's disease. And the other thing is that nicotine, I believe, is a vasoconstrictor. Like it makes your blood flow cutoffs. Like I would not think that it would help that. I mean, the only thing, you know, if you're bleeding to death, it's helpful to have a vasoconstrictor. Sure. But I think I can't imagine how, I mean, because this is the thing, when I was a kid, I used to get bronchitis all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why. I used to get it all the time. And they used to give me that great cough medicine. Wow.
The good shit.
Loved it. Yeah, exactly. And every once in a while, like, and I have 8 older brothers and sisters, like, so they were adults and teenagers. Every once in a while, somebody would walk by and just fucking upend my cough syrup, you know? I'd be like, what? What are you doing? Don't worry about it, kid. So you can get more.
Yeah.
So I used to love it, but I used to get bronchitis as a kid a lot. And my sister was a nurse, and she used to tell me, like, don't go in and out of air conditioning. It's really humid in New York where I grew up, and not that we had air conditioning, but if I were to go in or out of a place with air conditioning, she said the air conditioning dries out your lungs. And then because you have all that mucus and moisture building up underneath there, and that when you go out to the humidity, it like increases the level of moisture. But then when you dry out your lungs, it traps it down there. It can't circulate. It's too dry to kind of keep it moving. And that's when it kind of coagulates and can provide a medium for bacteria, viruses to grow. Pneumonia is just the fluid in the lungs itself, but to actually have microbes grow in there can be really hard to fight. So for me, and then I started smoking. My sister's like, you're going to have bronchitis for like 3 months a year, every year. I was like, I knew, and I was a waitress, and I was just like, it was really,
whatever,
it was not cool.
Worth it.
Yeah, I wasn't good either, because like I would just be hacking up a lung all the time. But I knew that the smoking just dried out my lungs, and it created that sort of, that's why I kind of felt instinctively when Brad, my co-host, said about the ventilators being bad for you, I figured it's probably because it's hard to control the dryness and the moisture and keep that system kind of fluid, which is necessary. That's why they give you like expectorants and stuff, is mm-hmm. to get that stuff out. And that's why I feel like if they're doing the wrong thing, it's very easy to make stuff super complicated. But I can't imagine that smoking or smog or any of that would make it better. I mean, maybe staying inside where it's always air conditioned, if that you're in a place hot enough for that, would make it worse. I don't know. But I feel like, I just feel like they can, it's so easy to make it worse that way. And I think that's the way to make it worse. So I would not buy a smoking thing as being good for it. Maybe it's just meant to counteract that, like that Italy and China would be the places where they always have the worst pneumonia.
Right. Right. And I can tell you, I've not been to China, but the time I spent in Northern Italy, which I guess is like the hot spot in Italy, right? With all these old people who smoke. Oh my God. Like they took smoke breaks literally every 10 minutes. You think it's bad here? It's really bad in Italy. I was outside Milan for like 2 weeks, and it was pretty bad.
I remember growing up in New York, and wasn't like a huge Chinese community, but I also lived in San Francisco, the Bay Area, when I was in graduate school, and smoking was already on the wane. Like I was in mm-hmm. California, and but absolutely every Chinese man, and not so much the women, I don't remember seeing women, but basically every Chinese man smoked. And I remember talking to my friend who's Chinese. I was like, what the hell? She's like, they all smoke. They are like, rarely someone will not smoke, just somebody who just doesn't like it, but they all smoke. So that's why that's the same demo of the people who are dying over there. So I'm sure those guys are the ones.
Sure.
I mean, they have to be, because that's the generation.
So with everybody stuck inside now, right, whether it's self-imposed or government-imposed, tyrant-imposed quarantine, what's happening out there in the world? Like, not what's happening behind the scenes, but what exactly are they hiding from us? I know there's been some reports of 5G towers going up and some of those 5G towers being burned down.
People are sending me pictures like crazy of the 5G stuff going up.
And what's up with the spraying, which may or may not be happening?
Yeah,
if you can touch on both,
I
would greatly appreciate it.
So the 5G stuff, I remember reading a couple of months ago that maybe it's last year that the Trump administration, the FCC, was not allowing municipalities to say no. They had to accept 5G and they had to provide easements for the towers to go up. Really? But I didn't really see them going up too much. Say that again.
So that's real handy.
Yes, I know. And this is Trump. You know, Trump is the guy we're supposed to like. And that's just silly, because it's totally big government stuff. So they were doing that. They were getting ready for that. And I was kind of waiting to see it because it said a 90-day shot clock. And I was like, well, then for sure in the next 90 days, they're going to be everywhere. And I didn't really see it. So now when people started sending me pictures everywhere of the trucks, I had to believe that that's what was happening. And I didn't know this, but apparently there's underground stuff that supports it. Are you familiar with how this stuff works?
Not really.
They're digging too. They're digging and putting more wires, which I thought they had pretty much as much fiber optic cable as you could ever need for anything. There was like such a glut of it. But so I've seen anecdotally lots and lots of pictures of that. As far as the spraying goes, so I was telling people I stupidly bugged out to California. So we have this place in the Coachella area because we like festivals. And so we got like a place to Airbnb because you can rent it out to the Coachella people. And then someday we could move here, my husband. Well, they banned Airbnb and they canceled Coachella. So for the first time ever, this house is empty. So I was like, oh my gosh, we never get to go to the house. Let's go to that house. So my kids aren't in school. They're home, you know, online schooling. So we came out to this place and
That's okay. Samson, it was yours, not
Lila,
mine.
Clearly here. Yeah, Samson and Lila have joined me out here. So I was like, it's in the desert. Like, how bad could it be? Like, they're not going to, they came down like a ton of bricks. Like, you can't basically go out of your house. You have to wear a mask everywhere.
Oh my
God. And it is in the desert. So it's really weird to see clouds and everything. But I had noticed the past couple of years, anytime we came out here, even could just grab a couple of days here when it wasn't being rented, there would be like the stripes in the sky. And I'm like, this is the desert. Like, one of the reasons I thought it would be valuable is like, it's always nice out. And if you can afford to like water the lawn or have a pool, like it doesn't matter that it's the desert.
Sure.
And I thought, don't people notice that there's stripes in the sky all the time? So I'm still seeing a little bit and I'm hearing it like 5 a.m. I hear, so I think it's military stuff. But it's nowhere near as bad as it's been when I've been before. And I do feel like there's like a little bit of a normal rain pattern happening and that like the grass is greener. But I think I never believed in chemtrails like until like a year and a half ago. And then I think it just got so much worse that it was just undeniable. And this is what I would say is like, I got it that you think they're contrails, whatever, but they're actually changing the weather on this day. Like, it was a blue, beautiful day, and then a couple of planes go overhead, and now there's, like, haze, and it's overcast, and the clouds are, like, crazy low. It looks like fluorescent light. Like, it gets really, really weird. And a friend of mine was telling me that it's worst in California because somebody tweeted at me from San Diego, another guy from, like, halfway up the coast, that it's like that there all the time because they're just constantly flying up and down to try to keep the moisture at bay over the ocean because they want the droughts and stuff. Like, to me, there has to be a reason. There has to be a reason that they're doing it. Like, it could be a sinister reason. Maybe it's not a sinister reason. I don't know if they want to impair the food supply or they really believe that the earth is too hot and they are genuinely trying to do solar radiation management. But it's my opinion that they're going to get public approval for it eventually. And then they're going to start doing it. And then they're going to admit that they're doing it. And they're going to say that it's different from what was happening now. And it's going to look exactly the same, you know, right. But I think they really cut back on it because they can't justify it. And I'm telling my kids, like, look at the natural sky because you're never going to see it again for the rest of your life. And they weren't believing me because I used to tell them all the time, like, that's fake, that's fake, that's fake. And now I'm saying, look, you see, I used to take pictures all the time. Like, that's not what clouds looked like when I was a kid. And now I have all of those pictures and then I'm taking pictures like all the time of the natural sky. And finally, they're beginning to see, they're like, oh my gosh, you're so right. Like, there's never any like stripes and there's never any of that low, weird, glowy gray, and every freaking sunset is like hot pink when they spray some particular thing. And so when we first got here, I was like, I can't believe they're still spraying. And I said, wait for the pinkest sunset you ever saw. And the kids were like, oh, Ma, you're right. And it was so ridiculously pink. And then when they don't spray, it's like orange and yellow.
Right. So I've never seen a real sunset because I grew up in Port Arthur, Texas, the armpit of Texas. sort of like a mini ship channel, you know? So had all manner of colors in our sunsets.
Do you think they sprayed there, or was it just like
it's just emissions from the plants.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I've driven through some of those places. It's just super industrial.
Well, and so I'm not necessarily a believer in chemtrails per se.
Yeah. Don't worry about it. It will come to you.
And I must apologize in advance to a listener and sometimes guest, Mr. Whiskey Pryors, who may or may not be a pilot, but is knowledgeable about aviation. And he comes unglued about chemtrails.
Because he says there's no such thing.
Right.
The pilots all say there's no such thing because they say it's not on their planes, and it might not be.
Sure.
They could be different planes.
But
I mean, I've had people who are really good people who say, you know, but I just want them to explain to me how the exhaust that comes out of the plane gets larger and darker.
Right.
You know, you understand how dissipation works in a three-dimensional, you know, environment. Sure. It cannot get bigger and darker.
Right.
And that's what it does because it's attracting water vapor to it.
Sure. No, I'm with you. Well, and I saw, I was sitting out back and it's this perfectly blue sky on a nice, West Houston summer day or spring day. And I'm looking up, we're sitting by the pool and I'm like, Jesus Christ, it's really blue out. Like it's a really nice day. It's cool.
Yeah.
And then my wife looks up and she goes, oh, there's two planes going by. And I went, no contrails. That's weird. And she just kind of looked at me like, what do you mean? What's that? And I was just, never mind.
Yeah, right. Like some days they don't. And the thing is, the contrails, I remember them when I was a kid, they were very high up. Mm-hmm. And they completely dissipated because that's what they are. They dissipate. But they're very low now. And they're everywhere. Right. It depends on the altitude and the weather conditions. So if it's just exactly right, I'm like, yeah, but I see it going in every direction at all different altitudes on some days. So what is it? Like what combination of altitude and weather makes it so that every altitude gets them on what weather? You know, it's just nothing makes sense. And I know the pilots can't stand that, but I think because they feel like they would know. And I mean, there was one airline company, whatever, had a bunch of airplanes and they sold it to the CIA. They sold their old equipment to the CIA. And that was a solar radiation. It's in Wiki. You can look it up. Then it went out of business. So I don't think it isn't, it may be just retired jets or whatever. I don't know.
Well,
but it's definitely happening.
I've seen on, when I'm deep down the rabbit hole on YouTube, watching conspiracy videos, there's all these tests that come out where they can test, surface water and ground samples and stuff like that. And there's just aluminum oxide or whatever. I think it's aluminum oxide. Yeah. Is that right? It's everywhere.
I think so. And there's a couple of strontium, barium. They put a bunch of things in there.
And aluminum, the only explanation to have it where it is in some of these locations is that it's being deposited intentionally by someone. It's not naturally occurring. And there's never been like an industrial site nearby. And like, look, this is the only way it can get here. So I don't know what to make of it. Like I said, I'm not necessarily a believer, but there's a lot of anecdotal supporting evidence that that leads me to believe it might be real.
I don't research it. It's not like a drum. I beat the drum, but I'm not an activist or whatever. This is the problem. This is my problem with it. I never wanted to believe it, and I never believed it. And I was just walking my dogs every day, and I would go out, and it would be a nice day, and then those fucking things would happen, and it would ruin the day, and I mean, eventually, I just could not disconnect what was clearly connected. And I just got pissed. I still want to be wrong.
Sure.
You know, I beg people to like talk me out of, to answer my concern, like give me the logic behind this. You know, I bought books from the 50s about jet engines and what their emissions were. Yeah, I'm like, I have 5 books because the books now are going to lie about it, right? So I want to go back and find and why are they different now? Because now, supposedly, they're more efficient and they have fewer emissions.
Right.
And it's just water vapor. Water is hard to compact. You know, it's like, it's very hard to condense water vapor. Like it'll stop compacting. So however much compacted is shooting out the back of the airplane, when it disperses, it's going to get thinner, not
one
thicker.
Would expect.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, it can't be so densely packed that like, it's opaque and solid. and get bigger and still, like, to the naked eye appears to be opaque.
Sure.
I think. I'm so I want to not, I want to not believe. I want to not believe.
Right.
You know, it's very hard.
Well,
especially since we've all decided that there's some invisible monster that we're all fucking afraid of. I'm not saying it's not existence, but it is invisible. There's an invisible monster that people we don't trust have told us, right? So you look at what are the congressional ratings? What is the media ratings? What is the presidential? President's probably pretty good right now, but for the most part, every poll taken in this country that I've read in the past 10 years is like, we have a 20% faith level in everything from media to politics, whatever. So people we don't trust at all have told us that there's this invisible monster and that we need to hide in our houses to the point of having no idea how we're going to feed our children a month from now. Mm-hmm. And we're doing it.
Yeah. It's ultimate compliance.
You're telling me, And you're telling me that there's no chance there's a little bit of aluminum dust in the fucking shit that looks like aluminum, you know, and tests aluminum. I don't know. I just feel like I wouldn't put it past them. You know, we are delusional and they can lie. They do lie. I don't know if they're lying about this, but if they were telling the truth, then I would like some evidence. They're telling the truth about this thing that's happening to us right now. If they were really truthful about the magnitude of the problem and the appropriateness of the policies they were adopting, they could connect those dots for us in a very compelling manner. And if they have all these nut job libertarian conservatives saying, just open America, they could explain the problem and then weigh the costs and benefits of the competing policy solutions. And they're not doing it. So I feel like I'm not saying it's not true. Whatever I believe doesn't matter, but we are being manipulated even if they're just lazy.
Yeah, absolutely.
So they, why not manipulate us about that?
Sure.
And there's a YouTube video. It's kind of funny of John Brennan explaining how cheap solar radiation management is. You wouldn't believe it. It's only $10 million a year. It's like, what are you talking about?
How does he know that?
I know. And I mean, what is it? Like, what is it? What are you talking about?
Yeah.
What is solar radiation management? I'm crazy, but.
Right. So we've covered a lot of bases. Is there anything that we missed? Anything you really want to hit on before we get out of here?
Let me see. I wrote a few things of like what I really think this thing is all about.
Sure.
I think a big part of it is to break down, you know, this principle of subsidiarity. It's like it's a Catholic thing, but it's also a libertarian thing. It's where at the lowest level of organization is where a problem should be solved.
Oh,
so if
sure.
you can solve, there's even like a gospel about it. If you can solve the problem yourself, you should. If not, ask your dad. Otherwise, ask like your priest, the mayor, whatever, or your family, your community. So I think the exact opposite of that is what a big goal here. And it's definitely happening. And it's like, even if you don't have the legal apparatus to push all the stuff down, there's so much pressure, shaming, whatever, that politicians at all levels, they're just, it's like when I was in radio, terrestrial radio, it was so hard for me because I didn't say the stuff that was in the paper. So people would yell at me and they would ask me for evidence and they would call and be mean. If I just had a really nice voice, little Hispanic surname, I'm a chick, you know, would be great on the conservative circuit. If I would just read the Wall Street Journal to people, I'd be Laura Ingraham right now.
Absolutely.
But no, just kidding. I'm not saying, I'm like, I'm so great. I'm just saying.
No,
just
I definitely think you're right. I think that's the case. I mean, as an ex-neocon, I think that's the case, honestly.
Yeah. So if you just do it, so when you're the politician or whatever, and you're reading from the script they want you to read from, and you're benefiting from it. Like, it's really not that hard to expect everyone to go into lockstep. I mean, and then if somebody steps out of line, like there was a guy, a Georgia mayor of Cumming, I think it was, where he was just like, he put this order in that he was told to put in by the, like, whatever, the system. And the whole town went nuts. They're like, we're not doing that. So he immediately rescinded. He's like, oh, my constituents don't want this, so we're not going to do it. And the whole world, like The Hill, New York Times, people were writing about this mayor of a town you never heard of in Georgia being a lunatic, know? So he rescinded it again, you know, like he made it, you just can't survive in that world. So I think that this is all about, it's really like a backdoor to world government. They can do it. The economy and health are two great ways to implement a world government without actually structuring it as a world government. Just let the puppet masters behind the scenes use, it's like when I lived in California, and I was a big smoker, and I loved bars. So I was a waitress, bartender. So they would try to like make smoking say you couldn't smoke, and nobody would vote for it in New York. It could never pass the legislature. They would try to like ban it. Nobody would pay attention to it. Mm-hmm. It was just, you couldn't enforce it. And then I went to California, and it was like this. It was like you hop on one foot or you're out of the state, you know, like right. Just whatever the diktat was, everybody did it. Then when I went back to New York, they implemented no smoking. A bunch of the bars closed down, everything like that. And what they had done was the mayor had like really unleashed the full force on the world of like enforcement of fines. They made people tell on each other, and he did it as a health and safety measure, so it didn't have to go through the legislature. But he got what he wanted. He changed the world. It's like executive orders, so they sure. can do it without the apparatus. I think this whole thing is bringing down wages. It's decimating people's 401ks. All surplus wealth at the bottom is getting sucked to the top. And if you get to the global level, global corporation level, they might not even have to provide half their people with offices anymore. So like it's almost, I think living space, you know, it's obvious, but living space is like pretty correlated mm-hmm. with poverty, right? So if you have like very people crowding together is a sign of poverty, and you have a lot of space for yourself and your family, that's a sign of wealth. If like right now we all have to homeschool inside, right? So we're homeschooling, my husband's working from here, I'm doing my thing from here. It's quite crowded and uncomfortable. But every one of us has freed up the obligation for our institutions to provide us with a sane, discreet workspace. Mm-hmm. And that will, if we can be trained to do it this way, we can give up that, you know, we can give that surplus peace of mind in the form of surplus profits to the survivors of the shakeout
right.
in the corporate level. So I feel like there's that kind of thing. Of course, the obvious stuff, universal vaccinations. I think I always thought concerts and restaurants were like the last bastion of humanity. Like I was like, wow, they're really digitizing my kids. Their world is virtual, but they still like to go to concerts.
Yep.
I can still like, they'll go to the pizza place and, you know, pizza, like the guy who runs the pizza place is just a guy who owns it. It makes some money. The waitress makes a big pocket full of tips. They're trying to give her minimum wage, which is so much less than what she actually makes. I just saw like, this was not, it was hope, like Little League, it was hope. You know, I see Little League with dads and sons, and if you don't get the ball, like there are consequences. And, you know, it was like hope for humanity, you know, and I think concerts and restaurants are going to be the two things that are really decimated. I bet you have to get a vax certificate to go to concerts, you know, or sports. I'm not kidding.
I can see it.
And it'll be voluntary. It'll be private enterprise. It'll be the
sure.
companies that shake out. The companies that get the bailouts are going to be the ones who always take that back door. Sure. You know, we have to comply, you know, and I know people like that. They tell you it's only responsible citizenship. It's like, really?
Yeah.
You know, like Tillerson was like the head of Boy Scouts, I think, you know, and it's just like, well, it's the right thing to do and blah, blah, blah. And I think the Boy Scouts are like as bad as the church and getting sued for, you know, abusing children.
Exactly.
But they act like they really care. They totally don't. And digidollars.
Yes.
I think they're going to go for the digi dollars, and what people miss about that is that there's an exchange rate with cash so that they can do negative interest rates and you can't just have cash and avoid them.
Right.
And your dollars can be worth 97 cents at the end of the year. I think that's coming.
And that came out, that was like in the first round of the stimulus bill,
yeah.
right? Where like they tried to do this cashless thing with the digi dollar, and it wasn't even some of that. I don't know if this was more conspiracy or if it was actually in the bill, but wasn't the idea that it would be this almost like the blockchain type thing, right? Where like you're in the separate app, separate account that you have to have set up to even receive the stimulus check.
Yes, I think so. And now that I and you'll see that there's some bad press about how the small business loans are being executed and about how paper checks are being delayed for some reason. It takes you like 2 weeks, but if you got direct deposit, it's less, and even that isn't perfect. So, and now that I think about it, the coronavirus will get people to stop using, they could actually ban cash, and then you don't even need that exchange rate thing. If you have no exchange rate, then that negative interest rate is just easy. Think about that. Because that destroys one of the like world-changing purposes of specie, you know, of money. It's supposed to be a medium of exchange and a store of value. And it won't be a store of value anymore. It'll just be a medium of exchange. And I guess you could store stuff of value, but again, that's like kind of a regressive thing. Like, I mean, space is going to matter, especially if they put people in sustainable cities. It's going to matter how much space you have. Like, having a closet full of gold isn't as good as having a bank account. That's why we all have bank accounts.
Certainly not as fungible. You can't carry a bag of
Yeah,
gold
yeah.
down to the store, right?
Yes. Yeah, and then they can put limit, you know, restrictions on it and serial numbers on it. And then I think that Trump's $2 trillion infrastructure jobs program is going to make, you know, the world safe for driverless cars. So your guns, gold, and a getaway are all going to be one step further from reality. But you know what? I'm still a little shocked by how compliant we all are. It's because a lot of people believe in the invisible monster. I'm not saying it's not really there, but it is invisible.
Even people that I've talked to about it, like when this whole thing first started, I was like, look, it's probably going to be bad, but it's not like that bad. You just wash your hands and don't touch your face, even though this whole time I've been touching my face, but I can't break myself of some habits. They're like, yeah, you're right. I think the same thing too. It's just everybody trying to get you scared. And then, fast forward a month later and everybody's kind of like, yeah, it's not that bad, right? But like, you're still looking around like, oh my God, where's the
I
Rona
know,
at?
but
I can feel it in
I'm
the
just
air.
not exactly. And I'm just I'm I I'm I might be asking for trouble to like not be afraid, you know. I'm more paranoid that someone might target me for not, well, I mean, because I kind of lost my show, I think, because of, you know what I mean? So
You said too
I'm not
much,
saying that
Monica. You said too
they would
much.
have, yeah. But it was their platform, you know, like I respect, I don't think they're coming to my house, but I'm more afraid of someone coming to my house than I'm afraid of contracting this, of dying of this virus.
No, I'm the same way. All right.
So
Well,
I don't,
Monica, where if
that's
people
it.
want to learn more about these type of topics, and since you're
Yeah.
off terrestrial radio, where can folks find you? Plug away.
Thank you for asking. My podcast is called The Propaganda Report. I do it with my co-host Brad Binkley, and we do deep dives, we do interviews, stuff like that. But our real flagship, the thing that I feel like there's a big demand for, and it's kind of hard to get out there, but people really appreciate it, is the Drive Time News Blast, which you can find on your Propaganda Report feed on podcast. You can find it at our website, thepropreport.com. But it's 30 minutes. If you're a subscriber, it's 45 minutes, but it's basically 30 minutes every day of news of the day from a perspective of truth, liberty, and justice. So my goal was to kind of compete with my own employer at the time because I was kind of preparing for a daily show. And I was like, let's just give folks the daily show and we'll show WSB how awesome it is. Like, you know, Event 201. They were just like, no daily show, no show at all. But the daily show is great, and we're very lighthearted and humorous. So it's like a actually a break from. It's not as numbery-y as I, you know, I like the numbers, but we have a lot of fun. So it's a good show, I think.
So what
That's
about
it.
Twitter, Facebook, any of
Yes,
that?
at Monica Perez Show, Facebook, ugh, you know, they're so trolly. I got deplatformed from WordPress. So my website's good, thepropreport.com, but I, you know, I used to be more active. And but I'm extremely active on Twitter at Monica Perez Show. I mean, I am just waiting for them to take me down. But until then, you can have an honest, open conversation. But I get like kind of shadow banned. So if you want to see what I have to say, you have to like go to my feed. My feed is not going to find you, even if you follow me. It's okay. At least they don't take down all my tweets because they're full of
Yet.
articles and, you know, yeah, they're gonna, I'm sure. Because the next phase, right now, they take people down who are mean. the next phase, they're going to take down people who are skeptical because, you know, people will die.
Exactly. We're dangerous. Skepticism. People like us.
Free
We're very dangerous.
Is dangerous. I know.
Well, Monica, thanks for coming on the show. We're glad to have you. You're always welcome back.
Thank you so much. I hope you didn't mind that I had like 3 cups of coffee before.
No, no, of course not. I didn't have enough today. So, but folks, y'all know what to do. Like, share, subscribe. We don't have a share the show Tuesday. I don't want to like step on your trademark, but like, share, subscribe, tell your mom, tell your dog, tell Monica's dog. We'll see y'all next week. Peace.
A 57 Chevy with a hillbilly band. Had a little honky tonk filled with one night stands. Take a telly on fire with a gonzo steel. A dark house space just to seal the deal. Yeah, top 40 country, better watch your back, cause this hot rod's faster than your Cadillac.